This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Escalated into open antagonism, a potential showdown, uncharted territory. That's how the dispute between President-elect Donald Trump and the CIA is being characterized in the press and by some members of the intelligence community. This, of course, has to do with Trump's dismissal of reports of a CIA assessment that Russia interfered in the presidential election in order to sway it in Trump's favor. Now, one of the strongest reactions has been coming from General Michael Hayden. He's former head of the CIA and the NSA. Here he is this morning. He spoke with NPR's Rachel Martin on Morning Edition.
This is just a dismissal of what the agency has said without an investigation of its data or of its analysis. That's scary, that the fact-based guys get shoved out of the room before there is any argument. Frankly, Rachel, it appears because what they're concluding seems unpleasant.
So if there is indeed a giant rift between the president-elect and the intelligence community, how serious is that, and what are the potential consequences? Well, Glenn Carl served for 23 years in the CIA. He was an intelligence officer on four continents, and when he left the agency, he was deputy national intelligence officer for transnational threats. In 2011, he published the book The Interrogator, An Education. It's about the crisis of conscience Carl faced after interrogating a suspected al-Qaeda leader for several months in two countries. Well, and Glenn Carl joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, how serious is the rift between President-elect Donald Trump and the intelligence community right now? Do you believe there's a rift?
Well, I don't believe there's a rift. There's a rift flowing all across the headlines, the pages, and everyone's consciousness. It's tremendous. But it actually is only a secondary issue compared to the larger issue of the competence or lack thereof of the president-elect with regard to national security and international affairs. It's stunning and an existential moment for the United States, much less the CIA. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, so tell me a little bit more about that. You heard the cut there from General Hayden saying that he believes Donald Trump and his team essentially are, in his words, pushing the fact-based guys out of the room. Is that what you see?
Oh, I see that absolutely is the case. One may make mistakes and get the facts wrong. Everyone gets 100 things wrong a day, and it's only the unusual person who actually can acknowledge that. But that's the truth. It's a sign of courage and self-awareness to do so. And it gives you the chance of getting things right in the future. If you simply dismiss things and assert facts that you wish and deny anything that seems to challenge your own view or your own self-aggrandizement, then you're dealing in what has been called an alternate reality. But that's too nice a term. Then you're simply lying and not living on the earth as we know it. It's a shocking development for the leader of the United States.
Is this unprecedented territory, uncharted territory?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, my personal experience goes back to President Reagan. But that means that I overlapped with colleagues whose direct experiences go back to the Eisenhower years, frankly. And there's never been a circumstance like this. President Bush, the son, did not accept many of the conclusions or like the conclusions, the views of the intelligence community with respect to Iraq or weapons of mass destruction or terrorism. An argument is one thing. And President Clinton had hostile relations in his first administration with Director Woolsey. That's okay, actually, to have substantive differences. But when you deny even to consider the facts, and if any statement is made on any subject at any time with which you think somehow challenges what you view as your own self-wealth or position, then you're dealing in someone who is almost clinically incapable of dealing with the world that we all live in. It's absolutely stunning. There's never been anything like this.
So this is a pretty serious... You're saying some pretty serious things about the man who has been elected to be the next president of the United States.
I am. And it's a horrifying moment. Others have said that the United States is facing, and I completely agree, and I myself have said separately, that the United States is facing the greatest crisis to its institutions since 1861. Not since the Vietnam War, not since World War II, since 1861 when the country broke in two. That is because our institutions our procedures, the checks and balances, separation of powers, and the social compact, as well as sense of reality and facts on which we all have to decide what positions we take and agree or disagree, all are placed into question for the glory of one person's sense of self.
So let's bring it back down to the specifics of what this means for the office of the presidency and its relationship, or President-elect Trump's relationship with the intelligence community, because that's the area of expertise I'd like to hear from you. Because just yesterday we spoke with Admiral James Stavridis. He's at the Fletcher School now. He was former Supreme Commander of NATO in Europe, and he said that he doesn't believe the executive branch can function if there's a rift or a break in trust between the president and the intelligence community.
I think that's a carefully chosen sentence, and I agree with it. And clearly I'm expressing the same anxiety or consternation, concern, dismay. I could give an infinite number of concrete examples, but let's take two just to start. Let's look at the Pacific and the statements that Trump has made with regard to China. By repudiating, one can argue in favor or against the TTP, the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement, but by simply repudiating it and alienating one of the two great powers, certainly in the Asian hemisphere, but also on Earth now, China, one sets a clash up that possibly could be avoided. It also means that we have withdrawn essentially from shaping the trade regimes, the economic policies, the strategic policies, the alignments, the alliances that have determined the security structure of Asia, which includes the United States, for the last 70 years. And that's done before the president-elect takes office. That's just on one issue in one area. I could go on for probably 5 hours. What has happened to NATO already is shocking because of the president-elect's associations and defensive comments with regard to Russia, because it is clear, independent of any intelligence assessment, that Russia's interest is to see NATO crumble. And by walking back from NATO unilaterally in a supposed declaration of national independence or some crazy thing, we have already weakened NATO. These are two of the pillars of the international order globally that rely on the United States as its foundation and protector, and already they are shaken. It is a huge crisis, and the Admiral at Fletcher is speaking carefully. Absolutely.
Mm. Well, so tell me, I mean, this morning General Michael Hayden on NPR said that it's the job of the intelligence services, of the CIA, to quote, in his words, get into the president's head. He said, we need to get our version of reality in front of the president, and we have to work very hard to make that happen. Do you think, I mean, it seems like he's saying he still believes that's possible. Do you believe that's possible? It's the CIA's duty, Michael Hayden's saying.
Well, I've worked with General Hayden and think very highly of him. He speaks from experience and concisely, and he's right on point. The operative expression for the CIA is that our job is to speak truth to power. And we are set up to be irritants, not to go along. And no one likes to hear that their hair isn't combed right, or that they've invaded the wrong country, or whatever we are supposed to say. But that is the job, is to speak independently, not in support of any policy, but attempt to present objective reality as best we can find it. And if we can't do that, then the president is left only with his opinion. And all senior leaders, and certainly all presidents, will be surrounded by yes men. Otherwise, they won't be there. So therefore, to counter that, you have the intelligence community. And we're essentially unable to function, which for the global
essentially
power—
Essentially unable to function?
Well, if you can't talk to the president, how can you function? If you can't, if the president is dismissing anything, any product, any assessment that you make as somehow partisan or unwelcome and simply locked out, then you serve no purpose.
Well, you know that one of the reasons why, I mean, this isn't the first time that the president-elect has dismissed intelligence presented or asserted by the CIA. He was very critical of the intelligence community during the election as well. His transition team over the weekend put out a statement that said, quote, you know, these are the same people that said Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. That WMD problem from the administration of George W. Bush does hang over the CIA to this day. It's the foundation of some of the lack of trust that I think Donald Trump is reflecting that average Americans still may have.
Yeah, it's a good debating point to make. It's also a fact that no one cares. You know, the details mess up an easy one-liner. But in the famous WND report itself, 47 times the intelligence community said, we do not know if the following is true. 47 times. Of the 535 members of Congress, something like 25 read it, but they all had opinions on it. 99 times out of 100, the CIA will, on the whole, get its assessments correct. It is true that WND, we got wrong by reporting accurately the information that we collected. Even Saddam Hussein's own subordinates believed that the programs were continuing, which we accurately reported. But this is it too much in the weeds. The main thing that's happening is a political maneuver to divert attention from Trump's comments and rejection of intelligence and professionalism onto a specific event that has nothing to do with him 10 years ago. That's, you know, sort of a cheap maneuver, but a standard one, and has really nothing to do with the issue at hand.
Glenn Carl, let me ask you, I wonder if your own, the particulars of your quarter-century experience at the CIA can help us understand this moment a little bit. Because in your book, your 2011 book, The Interrogator, I mean, much of that book is about how your own faith in the agency was damaged, in part because of the things that you were asked to do in the months-long interrogation of this then-suspected high-ranking member of Al-Qaeda who turned out to not be that. I mean, in the book, you write about how, you know, you were used in, quote-unquote, enhanced interrogation. Others would call it torture. And in fact, much of your book had to get was redacted by the CIA, and you put those redacted pages with the black lines in it. And you put footnotes in there saying regarding some of the redactions. I just want to read one of those footnotes. You said, apparently the CIA fears that the redacted passage would either humiliate the organization for incompetence or expose its officers to ridicule unless the agency considers obtuse incompetence a secret intelligence method. I raise this because you wrestle with your own damaged faith in the agency in your book. What gives you confidence now that the CIA and its assessment of Russian interference in the election is one to be trusted?
Well, in a moment on the book, because it's relevant, I particularly was focused on or concerned by how we had gone astray in the enhanced interrogation program. Deep down, the book, sad and tragic as it is about a series of errors that we made, is a book of idealism about how to be an honorable officer, a leader, a public servant, and how America can get it right if we do it, if we live up to our ideals. So I wouldn't say it was a repudiation of the mission of the CIA or even its core functions and competence, but certainly on the enhanced interrogation program, I remain gravely disturbed.
Hmm. Well, so what gives you faith now? I mean, do you have faith in the agency now that what it's presenting in its assessment can be trusted?
Well, any human endeavor will be flawed, and all social organizations consist of humans, so there will be error, of course. President Lincoln was talking about a rival and an ally of his one time in 1861. He said, yes, the man gets it wrong. This was Senator Lane from Kansas. He said, the man gets it wrong sometimes, but his eyes are turned towards Zion. He's moving generally and trying to move in the right direction. I think we do a little bit better than just going in the right point of the compass, but you have ideals, principles, you set good standards, and then when you err, you try to rectify your error, and then you continue to move ahead. Do I have faith that the agency attempts to do those things and on the whole succeeds? I do.
Two more quick questions for you. You know, there is an investigation or an inquiry going on. The Obama administration is launching one about Russian involvement. Do you think that the findings of that investigation and any congressional investigation, should it happen, should they be declassified and made public?
Oh, I think yes. You can always, almost always, declassify assessments and substance without revealing sources or methods. So the answer to that question is yes, it should be declassified. Do I have full confidence in the bipartisan, neutral, objective nature of a Congressional Oversight Committee's investigation? No, I don't.
Finally, do you think that that trust can be built between the president-elect and the intelligence communities? And what's at stake if your answer is no?
Well, the answer is no, because you know, a tiger doesn't change its stripes, and a person doesn't change his personality and his basic worldview. And we have seen from the first day what the visceral psychological approach to interactions is of the president-elect, and that won't change. So he will remain egocentric, narcissistic, very defensive, and will deny, destroy, and attack anything that challenges anything other than praise for him. So that does not augur well at all for relations of the CIA with the executive in the Oval Office or the functioning of the National Security Establishment.
So how can the CIA function if it feels like it can't – I mean, can't have any sense of trust with the executive? How can it function as an agency?
It's a critical question, and I said we are in the greatest crisis since 1861. Mike Morrell, a former acting director, a colleague of mine whom I overlapped with in my career, said that this is the equivalent of a 9/11 moment for the intelligence community. Others have called it the gravest crisis since World War II or facing our republic. All of these statements are true. This is a huge issue, that you have someone who lacks even a second grader's competence substantively, and the stability of someone who would last probably 4 seconds in an assessment by the CIA before being rejected.
Well, Glenn Carl served for 23 years in the clandestine services of the CIA. He left the agency as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Transnational Threats. He's also author of The Interrogator, An Education. Mr. Carl, thank you so much.
I wish I could say it's my pleasure.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.